This podcast episode is sponsored by Audible. Get a free 30-day trial and any audiobook of your choice. Any book for free by going to audibletrial.com/chocolate. The show is also sponsored by FreshBooks. Did you make it through tax season? We did, because of the glory of FreshBooks. It's custom made for small businesses, and you can try it out for a month for free. Just go to gofreshbooks.com/chocolate. What is Kraft chocolate? When we speak about fine chocolate, how do you define it?
Oh my gosh, it's like many things.
How do you define fine cacao and chocolate?
It's interesting.
So if you were going to define Kraft chocolate in a sentence, what would that definition be?
I don't know that I would do it yet, to be perfectly honest. And I'm not saying that to be difficult. I hope that it's okay that I'm resistant to defining things, but I really, really want for the industry to collaborate to just define these things together.
Well, that's a question that kind of strikes fear in my bones, because you would think I would be able to give you a succinct, definitive answer, and I can't. What I can tell you is, and that's one of the things I love about the industry, is that it's still so new and young that we're still going through this self-discovery and this questioning of who we are and what we do and what our values.
Let's start with, how do you define Kraft chocolate?
The difficult thing is that everyone's busy trying to build their own business. It's very hard for one or a few makers to dedicate lots of time to sort of building these definitions. I don't really have a great answer.
No, I completely understand the frustration, because just because something's evolving doesn't mean you don't need a stake in the ground to build from. And I think that's an important thing to be able to do. And this is what I think everyone's been trying to distill over the course of the last 5 years.
So then tell me this, how would you define? Those responses are why we're doing this show. Kraft is something that people feel that they know when they see or taste certain kinds of chocolate. But in actuality, there's no set definition of what Kraft, fine, specialty, bean to bar, artisan, or small batch chocolate actually are. Now, that's not true of other industries. There are explicit definitions of craft beer, specialty coffee, and artisanal cheese. But there's nothing codified for the food of the gods. This industry is young and evolving, which means that chocolate eaters are being presented with a dizzying array of options everywhere. Fun-size candies and origin bars at Walmart, all the way to gem-like confections in luxury chocolate stores in Brussels. Now, because of this, we may not know where to start or how to get the kind of chocolate that we'll really love. I spent 5 hours interviewing 6 chocolate experts for this 20-ish minute podcast and chatting with and emailing over 50 people involved in chocolate over the last 1.5 years. It was all to answer this one question: what is Kraft chocolate? The short answer is, it's complicated. So today you might not get full answers, but you will most definitely get insights that will help you better navigate the chocolate aisle. Let's start by clearing up a few foundational terms: fine, flavor, and industrial. First, industrial. Now, the people you're going to hear from today use industrial to reference the kinds of equipment used in cocoa production, such as industrial methods versus by hand, and also to reference scale, as in mass production. Remember Bridget LaLiberté from the first show? When I interviewed her for my book, she reminded me that if we keep separating industrial, which is also known as bulk or commodity cocoa, from specialty cocoa, we'll never bring quality into bulk or recognize the kinds of cocoa and flavors that can come from every country where cocoa is grown. Now, that's something I want you to remember as you listen to the show. There is a place for industrial chocolate. It's a chocolate most of us grew up loving and still love, and it's an industry that has the greatest power to transform farming and the lives of cocoa farmers. Specialized chocolate is a tiny but fabulous part of the chocolate market, but the change can't come from just this one place. And one other thing Bridget reminded me is that the point of reference for researchers and chocolate manufacturers who are analyzing the quality of chocolate are bulk beans from Ghana. Those cocoa beans are known for their dominant cocoa flavor. They're like the chocolate touchstone of chocolate. So what's fine and flavor chocolate? Well, it's different from fine and flavor cacao, which is a designation that the International Cocoa Organization gives to cocoa beans and the countries that grow more specialized varieties of cocoa.
Today, fine cacao and chocolate is often looking back toward a 1800s or early 1900s approach to chocolate making that tended to work with smaller scale equipment, with beans that were sourced from a single origin, that figuratively sort of reduced the distance between producers of cacao and consumers of chocolate. And it really took off with excitement among French chocolate producers, companies like Bonat, like Valrhona or Bernachon in the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, who began producing single origin chocolate products that were meant to express a sense of terroir through their flavor.
That's Carla Martin, founder and executive director of the Fine Cacao and Chocolate Institute. She says fine and flavor cocoa and chocolate have been around for a long time. I mean, think about it. From the times of drinking chocolate in Mesoamerica to its introduction in Europe, all cocoa was single origin, and makers were small. But from there, we see a split.
So the history of the craft chocolate movement, it separates in an important way from the broader sort of premium or fine chocolate movement in that it aims to oversee by hand as much as possible the artisan process of crafting finished products. And also, in many cases, it also aims to actually shepherd the sourcing of cacao from the farm or exporter level all the way to the doors of a chocolate maker. And ultimately, what it ends up doing is creating a sense among both chocolate makers, among many of the people producing cacao from whom they are sourcing, and among consumers, of a decrease in distance between producers and consumers, and of a much more hands-on practice of both sourcing and crafting a finished product.
And that's a movement Karen Bryant, the head of the Fine Chocolate Industry Association, says really took off in the late 1990s, with two Bay Area men who started experimenting with cocoa beans in a home kitchen.
So Scharfenberger came on the scene in San Francisco in around 1997, 98, and it really did create a revolution, although not a lot of other chocolate makers jumped on board at that point. But I think people were watching them and just sort of holding their breath to see what is this all about. And of course, guess what happened? Hershey took notice, and I don't in any way mean to paint Hershey in a negative light. I'm so appreciative of the industry that they've created and the knowledge that they've brought and the work that they do about understanding the bean. But the Hershey Company took notice of Scharfenberger and bought them in 2005 and moved them from San Francisco, from their shop, away from their equipment, and moved them to the Hershey plant. And, you know, I can only report what I've been told is that many people felt that there was a void, a big void, and that they hoped that the Scharfenberger work would continue as it had, but people felt that there was a void. And Art Pollard and Steve DeFries, those were some of the first people to go in and fill that void. And, you know, around 2005, 6, 7, there were really only a handful of people who were, you know, getting in there and trying to do what Scharfenberger had done and expand on that. I mean, Art Pollard, who was one of the first to fill the void of Scharfenberger, that he's only been around for 12 years. I mean, that's still fairly new.
So Kraft Chocolate is effectively a tween. And like most tweens, it has trouble defining itself. So while it only makes up about 1% of the global chocolate industry, one thing is clear. Kraft Chocolate is growing. Carla shared some numbers.
So if we look at just the North American context, in the 1990s, we're talking single-digit companies were involved in making chocolate in this manner. And in North America today, it's now over 200 companies. If we then add in Europe, we're looking at probably closer to 300 companies. And if we then add in, there are even a few small companies in Africa. There are a number in Latin America and the Caribbean. There are also so a few in East, South, and Southeast Asia. So we're looking at more like 350 probably companies that are operating today at this small scale.
Okay, so what is it? What is Kraft? Although no one I spoke with could provide a concise definition, everyone agrees it has something to do with unique flavor and embracing some degree of variability over consistency. Unlike industrial manufacturers that favor consistency, what sensory expert Lisa Schroeder discusses in Show 5, you know, that sameness we find in an M&M or Twix, bite after bite, Kraft chocolate makers are embracing diversity. Here's Karen.
It was about finding beans, understanding what impacts the flavor of a bean in a certain region, and then understanding how the processing of that bean will pull out a unique experience, a unique flavor. If you embrace inconsistency, meaning you know from season to season, your chocolate may not taste the same because you're not roasting out the flavor and putting in your own. Your bar from that farmer is going to taste different from season to season, just like with wine. And that's what makes it interesting. And that's what they're going for, is interesting.
So industrial makers are concerned with, you know, absolute consistency.
That's Clay Gordon, author of Discover Chocolate and creator and moderator of thechocolatelife.com.
They want the consumer experience to be the same every single time they put it in their mouth. And one of the definitions that you might put on Kraft chocolate is that the experience of the chocolate will change, and it can change from harvest to harvest, or it can change from batch to batch.
Art Pollard, founder of Amano Artisan Chocolate, one of the elders in Kraft Chocolate and a founding member of the now-defunct organization Kraft Chocolate Makers of America, also embraces variability.
Really good quality food, no matter what it is, has variation to it.
Greg D'Alessandre, the chocolate sorcerer at Dandelion, weighed in too.
Part of what we think is fundamental about our chocolate and Kraft chocolate is you're sort of highlighting the nuances and the differences in your ingredients rather than trying to homogenize, rather than trying to make something that is consistent all the time. You know, nature has variety in it, and I think that variety is actually kind of cool.
What's also important for Kraft is scale. Now, everyone seems to agree that small-scale production or production of smaller batches are part of the definition of Kraft chocolate, because you tend to lose some of that unique flavor when things get more mechanized or the output is really large. But here's where we need to differentiate the category of craft from bean to bar. That term is all over craft chocolate, but large companies have oversight from bean to bar too. I mean, many times they have greater oversight than smaller makers because they visit origin frequently, they own or oversee farms, and of course they have manufacturing facilities in the areas where cocoa grows.
There are plenty of bean-to-bar companies out there. Hershey's is a bean-to-bar company. Mars is a bean-to-bar company.
A company like Mars has been around a lot longer, has intimate relationships with farming cooperatives or with large-scale farms. They travel to origin. They are more maybe bean-to-bar in a sense than some of these emerging makers who don't have that point of reference.
That is exactly part of why I think bean-to-bar gets confusing, which is why we tend to try to use craft rather than bean to bar in sort of most of our conversations. The other term, small batch, you know, I hate to say it. It's literally part of our logo. I think what small batch means is that rather than making very large sets of chocolate the way sort of industrial manufacturers are making batches of chocolate where you're using a small enough set of beans that there's going to end up being variation from batch to batch because you're not homogenizing multiple tons of beans together. And that variation is actually something, rather than being something people are unhappy about, is something that's actually kind of interesting and desired. But I think the core of what our customers are interested in and the core of what the makers are trying to do is we are deindustrializing.
And what does deindustrialization look like? Carla explains it's not only in the bar, but in the bean.
In general, they tend also to be sourcing their cacao differently than much larger companies are and offering a different value proposition to consumers.
Sunitha Deture, the founder and owner of the specialty chocolate store and online shop, The Chocolate Garage, says what differentiates Kraft is that it's a product that's handmade.
I think within the industry, the way we talk about Kraft chocolate, our assumptions are that it is a chocolate product that typically is starting with the cacao seed or bean and is being turned into finished chocolate by a person or a few people who are controlling the different steps along the way, and that there's hands involved. I think that when you look at the word craftsmanship or craftswomanship, I think that it's clear that it's something that's being made by hand that requires skill and experience.
And that skill takes time.
You know, I have folks who come into the chocolate garage and start chatting with me and say, oh yeah, I make chocolate. And, you know, I find out that they've been making chocolate for like months, you know, less than a year, and they are putting their product into a particular store that has credibility and has been around a long time. And I haven't tasted that particular maker, but I've tasted enough makers. I taste everything that comes out to know that the vast majority of what I get that's new, that we taste in a blind way, does not cut it. So I'm really concerned with the trivialization of chocolate making as a craft, as something that is a complex skill that needs to be learned. That, I mean, that's close to my heart and is upsetting to me, in part because I hear the stories from chocolate makers and how difficult it is to make a great bar and chocolate that doesn't get turned, you know, put out because it was not workable and that cacao is a loss and they can't make chocolate from it. I hear all the struggles that makers with integrity who are making a really high quality product go through. And then it pains me to see folks just sort of randomly throwing chocolate out that without any understanding of what they're doing. I think that our basic definition of craft chocolate is folks who are working with it in a very hands-on way. I think that in my mind, craft also implies some level of quality. But I think that the difficulty right now in craft chocolate, and because in a sense, the barrier is so low to start making chocolate with a tabletop grinder and some nice packaging, I think that quality is one of the problems that we're seeing in craft chocolate. There's just such a wide variety of quality. I think a lot of new makers don't seem to be reading any textbooks or even understanding like the basic science of making chocolate. But even beyond that, there's certain things you learn through experience. And even if you have access to the same beans, the new makers are not necessarily tasting the best chocolate out there to get a sense of what they're trying to achieve technically, whether it comes down to the texture, how it melts, you know, what the temper should be like, what are the different possible roasts that allow you to bring out the best flavors in a particular bean. And I feel like there's a lot of makers who ought to still be practicing sharing their chocolate in various ways, but not selling it yet. And yet those bars are being wrapped up and put out into the market. And so new makers come on, they taste stuff that has all kinds of problems with it, be it super astringent or bitter or just really sort of green and problematic in terms of off flavors. And they think, oh, okay, well, this is what chocolate's supposed to taste like. This is craft chocolate.
So there are the kinds of new makers Sunitha described, and then there are the veterans. Art Pollard is, as I already mentioned, an elder. I asked him about craft chocolate well over a year ago and caught up with him again for this podcast. Except this time, it was on the side of the road, which you can hear in our conversation. Sorry. So I had asked you a year ago what craft chocolate meant, and you responded, I think craft implies there is a level of artistry involved in what is being created. It also implies that the chocolate is produced in a smaller scale than the industrial chocolate companies. As time goes on, it speaks to me in regards to artistic freedom and creativity than it does size. Artistic freedom and creativity is something that is lost so often in industrial processes and is, in my mind, what makes us human.
Right.
Is there anything that you'd update about that definition now?
No, not really. Yeah. I mean, I do think that large companies can exhibit that artistic level, but quite frequently it just gets lost in focus groups. But if you mechanize it too much, you take the soul out of it.
It's very clear that there are chocolate makers who have been working to hone their craft for many years now.
That's Carla from FCCI.
That there are others who are taking the time to apprentice with people whose work they admire and respect as experts in the industry. That there are others who are working to share knowledge with one another. And that quality is something that comes with practice and experience over time, just as it does in really any field. And that there are also companies that are new to the market, that are still learning their craft, and that in many ways, price and marketing don't actually reflect these differences for consumers.
I hear you. I think the challenge for me is that in the vacuum that is everyone being reluctant to define it,
yes.
Every maker is defining it. So you're not defining it, and nobody is defining it, but all these random shandom makers are defining it.
Amen.
And consumers are buying it. And it's a great detriment. It's a great detriment that this is not happening, because the people who are paying for it and in making that investment will be turned off. You will lose them as well if there isn't any sort of clear trajectory for what this is supposed to be, because they hit a couple of bad bars and, you know, like, why should I bother? You know?
Agreed. So
there's just no sort of rules for people to follow. It's really kind of the Wild West. One of the problems I see with it is that as an industry, we have no control over this term.
Says Sunitha from the Chocolate Garage.
It is being used left and right by all kinds of folks who are definitely not touching anything with their hands, who have a really industrial process, and they're using the word craft or crafted in their products. And you have makers who are overpaying for cacao that is deeply flawed and is not something that's workable with, and then turning out bars that are really problematic. And this is really concerning to me, because I'm really interested in seeing a healthy ecosystem for cacao and chocolate where price and quality are connected. And when you have people overpaying for cacao that's not good enough, not worth that price, and I'm an absolute proponent for cacao costing more and more. It's not that I don't want cacao to cost more and bars to cost more. We've been at the forefront of helping our customers understand this is why this bar is so expensive, because this is the work that went into it. So that's not a problem for me. But my concern is when you pay for something that isn't about quality, then you start to mess up the signals for farmers. The problem there is that then we start to lose access to carefully fermented and dried cacao that meets a certain quality standard.
So what's a chocolate lover to do? How are we supposed to navigate the chocolate aisle?
Price does not tell you how good it's going to be. Ingredient list does not tell you how good it's going to be. Origin doesn't necessarily tell you how good it's going to be. And marketing certainly is there to make you buy without really understanding what's being sold to you, whether it's a sophisticated package or a heart-tugging, you know, package that makes you feel like you're going to be doing good by buying this bar. You know, all of those things are need to be investigated, and the average customer is not going to be able to understand with any sophistication and depth what the different bars are that are on the market.
And that's why Sunitha created the Chocolate Garage. But not all of us have access to specialty shops or expert advice. So Greg offers this.
Alan of Patrick, chocolate maker, at one point said, like, one of the main things people want to do when they're buying chocolate is not look like a jerk, right? I think people don't want to be the person buying the bar that someone says, like, I just read a report that that's made with child slaves. I can't believe you bought me that bar. The way we look at it is people buy chocolate because of the packaging the first time. They buy chocolate because of the flavor the second time. When you're looking at a wall in a store, you're just buying what looks good. And I don't blame you that is natural and human. Then you bring it home and try it. And if it tastes good, you're going to be like, ooh, I'm going to remember this. And so I think the biggest challenge is if you go into a store, there's no one there to help you. You're looking at this wall of chocolate. What do you do? And I think the main thing I would do is look for the word beans. Honestly, just like look and see if you see the word beans anywhere on the packaging. Because it's normally people who work with beans tend to say the word beans. I've just said beans like 20 times now, but seriously, the first thing you're going to go is back to our packaging and be like, do we say beans on our packaging? I hope we say beans.
Quick.
Yeah, put beans on there. Just write it in. Just like scroll it at the bottom. Just write down beans. Trust me, it's going to work. I know it's going to work. It's going to be amazing.
We're joking around, but he means it. Because what that tells you is a maker wants you to know about their beans. But Art says that signal also means you have to prepare for an adventure.
On some levels, I think it's really exciting, you know, because there's a lot of excitement, a lot of really exciting things that are happening, a lot of exploration. Mm-hmm. And I think from a consumer's perspective, they should just join everybody on that journey, quite honestly. And some of it will be good, and some of it's not going to be so hot.
Okay.
And so, you know, there's some people, and I like to think we're one of them, that produce, you know, really excellent chocolate. And it's up to the consumer to, like, hunt those people out, and just like any other product. But just because one person charges too much money, this shouldn't stop them from trying other people. You know, maybe they try 4, 5, 6, 10 brands before they find something that, like, you know, speaks to them.
So there needs to be a capacity or a willingness to explore and kind of embrace that same kind of really maybe even spirit that craft makers have done, which is like one of exploration and curiosity and a willingness to like fail, you know, in some ways
right.
And then try again.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's how society and the world moves along is through experimentation and some failure and mistakes. And then we all get up, regroup, dust ourselves off, and try again.
And that openness will pay off, Clay says, or at least for relatively low stakes, give us access to something pretty amazing.
I consider myself to be an equal opportunity chocolate lover. I will give every chocolate an opportunity to impress. I mean, for $20 in my pocket, I can go into a chocolate store that focuses on high-end small bars, you know, and let's not get into definitions of craft and artisanal, but I can go in and get these bars from all these really interesting makers. And for $20, I can taste from among the world's best chocolates. I mean, I have my choice of many of them. And you can't do that with, you know, many other gourmet foods. I mean, you know, if you want to test the world's best wines or taste the world's best wines, you're talking about spending tens of thousands of dollars on a bottle or more. And, you know, the Queen of England with all of her millions or billions or however much money she has, she can't buy better chocolate than I can. And that's really, really cool. That's a really empowering aspect about chocolate is that it's all attainable. Everything out there is attainable.
Thanks to our show sponsor, FreshBooks, the user-friendly invoicing software that's designed to help freelancers and small business owners get organized and get paid. Try it out for free for a month by going to gofreshbooks.com/chocolate. This show took an insane amount of time and energy from not only the Slow Melt team, but our guests. We didn't have endless hours for the show, but wanted you to be able to get more of their insights. So we've created an edited transcript of their interviews that you can find, along with information and links to all of our shows, on theslowmelt.com. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at theslowmelt. This show was written by me, Simran Sethi, with tremendous help from Katie Ranke and Kim Hawley. This episode was mixed and produced by the incredible Sean Corey Campbell and edited by the amazing Sasha Woodruff. On our next few episodes, we'll be exploring two key regions for chocolate, where it was born and where it lives. Stay tuned, and Choco Love for tuning in.